Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for the one, the only, Jeff Sika, Circle Squared Alts, one of the best money guys in the world, and of course, another perma bear who, actually, you're not a perma bear, you're just a guy that believes that we're overvalued up here, and that's really what you're seeing. What's going on, Mr. Sika?
Hey, Todd, it's good to be with you.
It's great to have you here. So, I guess, you know, obviously I watch on Varney all the time, and you're, you know, a man of the people. What are you seeing here? Give us a general overview of what you're seeing here.
Well, we've extended this rally based solely on the fact that it's become very obvious and evident to me, and I know with you as well, that we have a Federal Reserve that is scared to death to raise interest rates. That's the one thing that Janet Yellen has made very obvious in her talks, her last talk at Jackson Hole, is that they are scared to death to raise interest rates because they don't know what they've created. They don't know what vulnerability they created. And I believe that even though they're not outwardly talking about this to any great extent, they're really afraid that they've created an asset bubble, that they've distorted asset prices to such an extent that there could be a major collapse and the blood could be on their hands. So what I see is that traders and investors love low interest rates. They love artificially suppressed interest rates. So they're looking at it as long as the Fed continues to artificially suppress interest rates, keep people out of the fixed income markets, keep them reaching for yield, starved for yield, then the market is viable. And you know, the fact that we've had these dismal quarters in earnings, you know, these declines, 4.5% declines in earnings, the fact that the economy is growing at a horrendous 1.2, 1.1%, heading to sub 1%, is evidence of the fact that investors who are buying into this market really don't care that the fundamentals do not support valuations at this level. So, you know, we could sit back and pretend that everything is great, sort of like the Obama administration does, and buy into this rally, or we could be smart and make some decisions as to how to protect ourselves.
Well, you know, again, the Federal Reserve, especially since Alan Greenspan, has been the greatest bubble builders in forever. I mean, that's what they do. They create these artificial circumstances that cannot be sustained and cannot live. And of course, we end up in this bubble territory, which is where we are again, once again. Now, again, I can't tell you when it's going to pop, but there is certainly no economic data anywhere near as good as they pretend to, and when you listen to the pundits on air, I mean, they continue to tell you how good things are. And I want to know from your perspective, you're involved in a lot of things. How good are things out there, or are they good?
I think things are terrible. I mean, I really do. You know, I think we get very deceived. I've always been one that believes that, you know, that the small businesses are what drives the economy, and I think there's a lot of backup to support that. And you know, you look at things like bank earnings and $45 billion in profits. I mean, you would think that the rest of the economy has kept pace with that, but I really don't think it. I really don't believe it has. And even investors, I think there's a much more cautious tone out there, and that could be most seen in business spending, in capital spending. Businesses have not been spending. It's collapsed. We've seen that this outright collapse in capital spending. And what I believe that is that shows that there's very little confidence in the economy going forward. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty over the election. You know, I know Donald Trump is guaranteeing a drastic improvement in GDP, 4%. You know, I know there's promises being made by really both sides, but I think no matter what happens, and you know, I do support Trump because of his, for a few reasons, but one of them being the fact that he's offering the tax cuts, which I think are very needed right now. We're going to have to endure a lot of pain before we get back to normal, and that's going to require the interest rates normalizing and stabilizing at a reasonable level, and taking this economy off life support. And once this economy is off life support, there's going to be some pain to endure, and there's no way to avoid it. It's really, I think the Fed believes that they could bypass the whole cyclical nature of the economy and the stock market by manipulating money supply, but I don't think there's any way that you could avoid it. So you got to plan accordingly.
We are not avoiding a collapse. This is not, look at, forget about the fundamentals of the world. Forget about the market. Markets always collapse. It's just the way it's been since cavemen. I mean, it doesn't matter. The market is going to collapse. We are certainly at an overvalued point. Now, again, the only issue is when the collapse will come. There is no capital spending, as you have mentioned. But let me ask you this. I think that I like the tax cut thing, which creates more money. But I also think that if the Fed would get off their ass and raise rates, yes, it would be. First of all, it would bring in a lot of money from out of the country, because they'd be coming for ways to where to put their money. Okay, but the other thing it does, if you free up the entrepreneur and you bring in more money to allow people to borrow money, because the banks are never going to lend at these rates, then you bring up more business, you bring up more jobs, and all of a sudden it creates a vicious cycle of people who are working. And what do they spend their money. What do you think?
I agree 100%. I think this fear that's permeated the ecosystem regarding interest rates rising. You know, when you hear these central banks around the world warning the Fed to not raise rates, it's gonna cause this major upheaval. I think it's all nonsense. It's psychological. I mean, realistically, if interest rates go up too much, yes, you will slow down the economy. But the fact is, they're so artificially suppressed at this point, it would only be healthy if they start moving up. Because we failed to create the inflation that they targeted. We failed to improve GDP to any sustainable level. It's been dismal. So why not just admit failure and say, let's get back to normal, and let the chips fall where they may? And you're right. I believe that banks will start lending. I mean, the exactly what you said is true. And I, you know what? I have very little respect for banks. And you know what? And I take a lot of slack over it. But banks are not lending at these rates. They don't want to lend.
Why would you?
It's too risky.
Would you? Let me ask you a question, and you can answer this when we come back from the break. Jeff Sika, you can lend money. You can lend money at, let's say, 3.5%, or you can give it back to the full faith and credit for 2.5%. I want you to think about that. We're going to stop by here for a break. This is Jeff Sika, Circle Squared Alts, seen on Varney, as seen on TV, and there's more. I got more with Mr. Sika. If you missed an episode, libertytalk.fm. You can get the download of the Bubba Show as well as the Sporting Edge. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be right back with more from my guy, Jeff Sika, Circle Squared Alternatives. We'll be right back to the Bubba Show.
Tonight.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my guy, Jeff Sika, Circle Square Adults, with the Allen Edmonds shoes. But anyways, so Jeff, you know, you were saying, and I asked you this question before I went to break, if you're the banks, are you going to lend me money at 3.5%, or are you going to give it to the full faith and credit of the government for 2.5%? What would you do?
I would just lend as much as I had to still be considered a bank. But the risk that they take for that additional 1% is really not worth it to them. And they're not incentivized at all because the banks know. I mean, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars understanding the environment that they operate in. They know how risky loans are right now. They know to loan money to small businesses and individuals at this point does not make as much sense because of how anemic this recovery is, and they know that there is an underlying uncertainty that could make it possible that they won't get paid back. So why take the risk? I mean, you know, banks, first of all, have become like big hedge funds anyway. If banks are going to take risks, they're going to take major risks and in markets, investing, and they're not going to lend like they should be. The whole goal of lowering interest rates was to make capital more easily accessible, and I believe it should be more easily accessible to small businesses that have really extremely good balance sheets and deserve to be able to borrow money, but they're not loaning it to them, and the businesses are resorting to higher interest rates loans, hard money, and it's not benefiting anybody.
And okay, so we know of the problems. We know how ridiculous the Fed is. We know that they have, you know, no guts. We know that they can't make a decision. We know that they're just a bunch of people that work on mathematical theory, and they refuse to change the theory. And you and I both know you can't borrow your way out of debt. So what's the solution? I mean, I think that they're trying to get away from a free market system. I mean, even going to the EpiPen, I know it's a bad example, but markets price themselves. If you leave the market to do itself, interest rates would price themselves, asset classes would price themselves, and we wouldn't have all these issues if you'd let the free markets decide where they should be. What do you think?
Well, I'm a big advocate of the free market. I mean, very rarely, very, very rarely do I ever see a time that the government should interfere with the free market, even when the free market creates what I would consider problematic circumstances for certain people. Because the free market does, you know, the minute you begin to interfere, it becomes one of those scenarios where if the government is able to interfere in small things, then they're able to interfere in big things, and sooner or later you have across-the-board regulation and price fixing. And I believe that that's where the government is going to. I mean, I believe the government, through what's happened with monetary policy, with central bank policy, is that the ultimate goal of all this is absolute 100% control of all financial markets by the Fed. That's what they want, and there's a lot of people who really think, and I talk to these people every day, that really think if that happens, it won't be the worst thing that could happen, and I vehemently disagree with that. I mean, the government controlling the markets. Now all the rumors that the Fed is going to have to use these other tools, which include buying corporate debt and investing in corporate debt, buying all the financial instruments that there are, yet the economy is crawling. You know, it's almost like the broke guy is trying to help out the well-off guy by spending every last penny he has to try to help him, when in reality it should be the other way around. So I can't see this ending well. I mean, I think the problem is when something works, it's like I took my son to the first time I took him to the horse track in Saratoga, and you know, just for fun, we're going to put $20 on a race, and first race he picks the horse, and the horse wins. And first race, the horse wins. So we win, you know, whatever the odds were, a few hundred dollars. And then my son said, and he's 18, he said, well, this is great. You know, we should do this every year. And I said, let me explain something to you. I said, the worst thing that could happen to somebody that gambles is they win, because then they think they could keep gambling, and ultimately you'll lose. And I don't know, hopefully I got the point across to them, but the bottom line is that's what this central bank is doing. They think they're winning. They think they're winning by, they artificially suppressed interest rates, the markets have been at historic highs, nobody's really given them much slack over what they've done, and they think they're winning. But what's ultimately going to come out of this is that the whole system is going to change, and what the ultimate result is going to be, people will lose confidence. People will not have a confidence in a market that's controlled and governed and manipulated by the market, by the government. They just won't. Well, not for any specific period of time. They might make and extract profits for a certain amount of time, but people will never in this country fully trust the government ever, and that's the way it should be.
Do you believe that they really think they're winning? I mean, you know, it was interesting at Jackson Hole. You know, first of all, you got Dudley and Lockhart and Fisher saying they should raise rates. And then you get Yellen kind of indicating, well, maybe we will. But then she says, but we can always look at buying corporate things, and we can actually, you know, try to take the Japan or the Chinese model, which is just buy assets, which doesn't work anyways. When you own the entire market, there's nowhere to go with it. And when you've taken away free markets, it really ruins everything. So I think they believe that they're actually in trouble. And I think that will be the end when everybody else realizes that the Fed thinks that they have a problem, because I think they realize that they're screwed. And I think they realize that they did everything wrong that they could do, going back to, I mean, we can go back to Greenspan, but I'm just going to go back to 2013 when Bernanke had the chance to raise rates and he chose not to. He backed off to the market pressure, and all of a sudden we've got a mess. What do you say?
Yeah, exactly what you said is true. And, you know, I'm going to start talking about this. I got this contact, a really good contact that was formerly with the Fed, and I speak to him regularly. I don't think I'm at liberty to really talk about who he is. He's not with the Fed anymore. He's in academia with me and doing, you know, what I had asked him, and he still keeps his contacts with the Fed, and I asked him, do they know what they're doing? Do they honestly know what they're doing? And he said, no, of course not. They don't know from day to day what they're doing. They're just sort of going with the flow and hoping everything's going to work out. But I think on some level, and I have a hard time grasping this mindset, this psychology, but I think on some level they believe that they will pull a rabbit out of the hat, because they believe, as true Keynesians, that they have the resources and the tools within their own models to create something out of nothing. I really believe that. Or else, why would they not start hinting more at the fact that they failed? Why? I would think common sense. Most people would start to say, you know, maybe I should start to let people know subtly that we messed up. I mean, they have not backed off these random initiatives, and even though there's differences in opinion, you'd think at some point they'd want to stop the bleeding and come out and say, we failed and we're going to let rates rise and it could be difficult, but we need to go through this as a country, as an economy, for us to maintain the economic freedom that we enjoy. Why haven't they done that?
Well, first of all, because people that work out of a mathematical theory out of a book, and they're trying to write the proper formula, never admit that they're wrong. They just say that the system is wrong and it's flawed, and they continue. They will not move off of their theory, and they believe that they can borrow their way out of debt, which we know is a total crisis. But the problem is, when you have a bunch of academia in a room that will not look at what the real life is all about, they can never succeed doing that. This is Jeff Sica from Circle Squared Alt, Circle Squared Alternatives. Check him out. He is the advisor's advisor. He's my friend, and we're fortunate enough to have him on today to talk. And we're going to talk a little bit of Amazon, some other things when we come back. But this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Jeff Sica, Circle Squared Alt. You miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. We'll get you the download of not only The Bubba Show, but The Sporting Edge. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break.
How about you?
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my guy, Jeff Sica, Circle Squared Alt, Circle Squared Alternatives. He's the advisor's advisor. You see him on Varney. You see him all over the place. An ex-banker. Hates bankers now. But anyways, so Jeff, I know you've been involved in an Amazon project, and obviously you've talked about it. So tell us what's going on and what you've done for him.
Well, it was interesting because there was a discussion on Varney's show on Fox Business about Amazon was building one of their, I think it's their ninth fulfillment center they're building in Texas. And the discussion was what happens to a town that builds a fulfillment center. And keep in mind, a fulfillment center is massive. It's about 1 million square feet. I believe that's about 10 football fields long. It's just a massive, massive facility. And I saw that topic and I said, I got to talk about this because in New Jersey, in a town called Carteret, we built a Amazon fulfillment center, and the town of Carteret was an industrial town, struggling economically as most towns in New Jersey are struggling. And Amazon built this facility, and it created hundreds and if not thousands of jobs, because to run an Amazon facility is a major fulfillment center is a major endeavor. So one of the positive elements, sometimes I take a lot of slack over being negative, and I am negative on the stock market and I'm negative on the economy. But when you see something like that, when growth, where a dynamic company like Amazon comes into it, builds a fulfillment center, which is the direct result of its growth and creates jobs, and these jobs are about 30% higher paying on average than the brick and mortar retailers pay. So it really created what I would consider a renaissance in a town that was really struggling, which is why I'm a big advocate of growth, because when you grow, when you have a company like Amazon that creates jobs, that's what you want to do. Now, unfortunately, and I hate to paint a dark picture on the overall outlook of the economy, there's not many Amazons out there. There's really none. There's nobody else doing this. There's not, with that I see. And Amazon can't be the only company that's creating jobs. They can't be. And that's, we could be very confident, and I'm extremely enthusiastic. We're redevelopers in Carteret and bringing this town to life, creating housing and stores, and we're bringing food, shopping centers, and everything that this town really needs to become the dynamic town it could be. But we need more of that. And unfortunately, we don't get much of that when there's only a handful of companies that really have the growth potential that Amazon has. And that's, you know, that's one of the my complaints is that, you know, we love from a real estate perspective to analyze demographics and to be able to build beautiful functional structures within these towns because their economies are improving. You know, if we're Amazon, as a matter of fact, their major presence in Seattle. I mean, just their presence in Seattle just created this massive, massive price appreciation in real estate because of their presence. And, you know, what I envision, one hopes someday we achieve is that there's a lot that companies become profitable and they help everybody. They create jobs, they create all these opportunities, they enhance the value of real estate, and I don't really see we have that much. You know,
We have none of that. Okay, in this country right now, you've got a president that wants to continue to give money away. You've got a candidate who wants to continue to give money away. Now, Trump is not going to be able to change everything. Everything he says, obviously, we know is not changeable within one term or whatever. This is going to have to evolve over a long period of time to make the changes that he's talking about. But at the end of the day, we have a society that no longer has the velocity of money. Money no longer flows from hand to hand to hand because they can talk about inflation all they want. We have a lot of inflation, just not in the goods that they like to count as part of inflation. Because I know one thing for sure. Most people are making less money than they made 10 years ago, and we're paying a hell of a lot more for food and energy and things that you need to buy all the time. Now, you can cut those out and exclude those, but I don't know how you can possibly do that when you now are creating a deflationary scenario for the farmers of the country, of the world, because they're not able to sell. They're getting killed. So now we're getting killed on every side of the market, and that all has to do with the lack of any real jobs. When you have a participation rate that is below 1976 and you are creating minimum wage jobs and you're creating more of a dependence on the government, you're creating a big mess and a pile of crap. And until we resolve that, this is never going to go away. What do you think?
Yeah, it's true, and I think that, you know, that participation rate is so overlooked by really the government. I mean, to me, it's such a crucial number. And you know what I see a lot of now is, and you brought up the point, it's the quality of jobs, it's the ability of individuals to save and invest. I mean, the worst thing that could happen to an economy is you annihilate the middle class. You study any society that's collapsed. Is the minute the middle class falls apart, there's repercussions that last decades and in some cases centuries. And that's exactly what this economy has created, what the Obama economy has produced, is the complete annihilation of the middle class. And the government relying on these jobs numbers. I mean, I don't think there's anything that makes me as furious as hearing somebody or some pundit say that the job situation is improving. I mean, you could explain this to a fifth grader and say, if somebody needs to take two jobs to replace what one job used to pay them, that should not count as a positive for the employment situation. It should not. It should count as a negative, because if you have to replace one income with two incomes, which a lot of people are doing, you know, I want to see what's the percentage of people who take on second jobs because the first job isn't paying enough. How many people have just given up? I mean, it's astronomical, and the world that our children are going into, unless something drastically changes, is going to be a lot more difficult than it was for us. And that's really where we have to take a stand. I think we're one, you know, the last couple generations, really the last generation, has been probably the first generation in history that I know of that was unwilling to sacrifice for the next generation. I mean, I think that's why I don't believe in procrastinating when it comes to doing what needs to be done from an economic perspective. If we need to endure some pain, I would rather endure the pain now than pass it on to future generations for the greater pain that they'll have to endure in the future. But there's not a lot of people who think like that. I think a lot of the baby boomer types that are in the government today, they don't think that way. They think about, you know, instant gratification, and we have a central bank that's focused on instant gratification, and all they care about is how everybody feels about them, about how things are that moment, instead of saying, you know what, we got to make some sacrifices as a country to get things normal again, to get growth where it needs to be, and instead of pushing it off on future generations. I mean, I tell my kids all the time, I said, I really hope there's not a point where your generation really hates my generation. I hope that never happens, because, you know, the way we look at it is, you know, my generation and the generation before mine has made quite a mess of everything. So it's going to take a lot to change it, but I hope it happens.
Well, wouldn't you say that we also made a mess of our younger generation, because we taught them that life was too good, and we didn't test them to go to work when they were younger. We gave other priorities to things that they never learned, and things that you learned on the street when you were probably 12 years old. Your kids probably don't even know yet. And I think that's a problem, because we became more, we created the entitlement generation, and which is how you saw a lot of this play out at a lot of these colleges, where, you know, free education and no student loans and no hard work, and we're entitled to have everything. I mean, that, I think, becomes a bigger problem, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, when I think about some of the things that the younger generation take for granted, and you know, this the entitlement generation, you know, I think it's a, and you know, I grew up in the 80s, so I loved Ronald Reagan, and you know, believed in all that, and you know, what was exciting about growing up then is that you saw this big upsurge in small businesses, and I just thought that was so fascinating.
Hold that thought.
You don't see that.
Jeffrey, hold that thought 1 second. This is Jeff Sika, Circle Squared Alts, Circle Squared Alternatives, the advisor's advisor. He is my guy. He's my friend, and very smart, and understands the entire business. One of the few guys who was buying in 08 in the real estate market. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back after the break. You missed an episode. LibertyTalk.fm. You can get The Bubba Show. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Jeff Sika, Circle Squared Alternatives. Big builder, just put a bit together, a big Amazon deal, building, helping the country grow. Unfortunately, we need about 9 million of him, and we only got one. And I don't think people see the picture the same way you do, Jeff. I think that this is a much bigger problem. You know, GDP sucks. I mean, they can talk about it all they want, and they can spin it in any direction they want. First of all, as you always told me, you felt the S&P was not really an average. Why do we benchmark against the S&P? And I say, not only do I agree with you there, but I don't think that the GDP is a proper way to measure anymore, because if you look at GDP the way it's calculated, if you take a $10,000 bottle of wine and drink it, and obviously you get rid of it, or you take a $10,000 piece of equipment, they should not have equal and fair value, but they do based on GDP. So I think that's a bunch of horse crap. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if every single government statistic needs to be revamped and relooked at, and I agree with you on GDP. You know, I think there's I like the whole idea of looking at the economy from the perspective of the small business owner, you know, and really getting an understanding on what the small business owner is going through these days, and the difficulty in obtaining credit, and which is just, it's such an ominous problem, and people don't see that, you know, that when the banks, and that's why the banks have gotten so much, you know, when we had the financial collapse in 2008, the banks want to blame the consumers. You know, they want to blame the consumer in the that were, you know, that were irresponsible in paying back their loans. In reality, they were irresponsible in leveraging those loans.
Well, didn't they? Hold on, that's a good thing. Did they not prompt this whole bubble themselves by giving no doc loans, by doing all the stuff that nobody would ever do, and of course knowing that the American taxpayer and the Federal Reserve would end up bailing them out? Because at the end of the day, we pay for the Fed. We, the taxpayer, pay for all the mistakes that they make. That's why they don't care about the mistakes they make, which is why they won't change what's going on. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And I think that what happens is that yes, in fact, that they did, you know, they did loan money to people who didn't really deserve to get the loans. But what they did, which was the more, what I would consider egregious element of their conduct, was the developing these financial instruments. And I know a lot of the people. I've been around a while, so I know a lot of the people who were in the institutions. You know, we just recently brought in somebody into the company. I'm about to announce them, that was a part of the institution, a big institution, financial institution that's come here. Sort of got fed up with them and decided to join us. But you know, the one reality of it is a lot of they were running these experiments on building these different financial instruments and leveraging assets and debt, and those implosions were what were the major catalyst for the collapse. It's one thing if you have a certain percentage of your borrowers who default. It's quite another thing if you have a certain percentage of your borrowers default on highly leveraged paper. And that's ultimately what happened. So, you know, when the borrowers get blamed fully, I think they deserve some blame, but I think the financial institutions deserve greater blame. And, you know, what appalls me about what's happening with banks today is that they owe their life to taxpayers, the vast majority of them. If the taxpayers, through no vote of the taxpayers, didn't bail them out, there'd be far less banks than there are today. And I really believe, and this is where the rubber is going to meet the road, I believe the banks have been doing a lot of the same things that got them in trouble in the first place. They're doing them again. And the one thing they're not doing this time around is lending money to people who deserve them to have money lent to them. So they're adding insult to injury, but not only continuing to do what they did that got them in trouble in 2008, but they're not lending money to people that deserve them to lend money in. That's why they've become these gigantic hedge funds in and of themselves. That's where they make their profits. And, you know, I think it's gonna come back to haunt us, but mark my words, the banks will have blood on their hands again. And they may start with it's brewing in Europe. It may start more in Europe, but it is certainly gonna come here.
Well, no, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, but I have to take issue with the lender's not at fault at all, because it's the bank's job to say, no, look, if you're struggling in a business or you're trying to build something and you can get access to money and they're going to keep giving it to you, why wouldn't you keep taking it? I can't blame the borrower for taking the money. I can't help it that the bank is ignorant. They want to keep giving it up. But of course, banks are greedy anyways, because they don't look at the principal you borrow. They look at, well, he's going to pay me $100 a month forever, and then if he defaults, I'll try to renegotiate and I'll still get my money and still get my income. That's where the system is. The whole cockeyed system is screwed up, because banks are too big, and banks basically have the ability to print money as well. So not only do we have the Federal Reserve that prints money, but the banks, just by the sheer charter of banks, can print money, because when you can loan out at 9-1, okay, of what you're holding, and half the time they're not holding what they're supposed to be holding in reserve, you are in effect creating money, are you not?
Yeah, and here's the thing too. It's the banks have become government agencies. They're basically government owned, indirectly government owned. So we look at these credits for these different smaller businesses. You know, we're in one of the asset classes we invest in. We rely heavily on the credits of the tenants of our real estate. So we've really learned how to analyze credit to a very in-depth level, so we know, you know, we know who's an A tenant and who's a B tenant, and what we see is that there are some extremely good credits out there that are not getting any money, and you know, because the money is going, the banks are diverting it elsewhere, away from the people who really need it and the people who could really make a contribution to growing the economy. So it's one thing that you have these gigantic companies that are making exorbitant amounts of money, but if you don't enhance and promote the ability of smaller businesses to make money, you ultimately don't have a recovery. You can't claim a recovery if it doesn't bring small businesses with them. So no, I don't blame them for borrowing money if they're capable of paying that money back. But most of the higher credit borrowers that I know are not getting any money. If that, they're relying heavily on their own cash flow to fund their growth, and that shouldn't be the case. I mean, granted, companies do in fact get themselves in trouble at times, but if you look at the statistics of the small businesses that actually get themselves in trouble, that borrow, that are considered a higher credit borrower, it's very minimal. It's not alarming to any extent. It's not as if the banks could make a global statement that that they shouldn't loan to small businesses because they're bad payers. As a matter of fact, they've proven to be very good credits for the financial institutions, but they have a greater upside doing other things with their money. And they've chosen not to, and I think they have an overall concern that we're going to have an economy that is going to really hurt the small businesses when it turns.
Well, I'm going to say it this way. We only got like a minute, but I believe that the small guy, the independent, is a more dependable borrower than the big guys, because the little guys, they want to make sure they pay it back because they need that money to operate. You got 30 seconds.
Absolutely.
Give me your answer. Good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's exactly it. There, you know, to me, when you have a small business, it becomes inevitable that your highest priority will be to remain a good credit.
That's right.
To whoever you're borrowing.
You want to be a payback.
Because that's your lifeblood.
That's right, because you need that line. This is Jeff Sika. It's been a great show with my man Jeff, and we need another hour to go. Jeff Sika, Circle Square Alts, thanks so much as usual. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Todd.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. That'll do it for today. Make sure when you miss an episode, join the other 250,000 people who are downloading this show. Get the Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm as well as the Sporting Edge. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you later, everybody. Thank you.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.